Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Joel Mokyr's The Enlightened Economy is a major work of economic history that explains Britain's Industrial Revolution as more than a story of machines, coal, or capital. Covering roughly 1700 to 1850, it argues that Britain's long-run economic transformation depended on a distinctive intellectual and social environment shaped by the Enlightenment. Mokyr's central claim is that useful knowledge, especially knowledge grounded in observation, experiment, and practical application, became increasingly available and more effectively organized in Britain than elsewhere. The book is not a narrow narrative of inventions. It is a broad synthesis of institutions, beliefs, communication networks, craftsmanship, and scientific culture. By connecting ideas to economic change, Mokyr shows how technological progress became self-sustaining and why modern growth emerged when it did. The result is a rigorous but readable interpretation of how Britain became the first industrial economy. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the Industrial Revolution as a knowledge-based transformation, not just a surge of machines. Mokyr treats the Industrial Revolution as a long historical shift in how societies generated and used knowledge, rather than as a brief burst of mechanical invention. His argument moves beyond familiar explanations centered only on coal deposits, wages, or capital accumulation. Britain mattered because it developed a culture in which progress through useful knowledge became increasingly normal. That meant technical improvements could spread, accumulate, and be refined over time, instead of remaining isolated breakthroughs. The book presents industrialization as a process in which economic change was reinforced by ideas about improvement, experimentation, and practical problem solving. This perspective is important because it changes the unit of explanation. The key question is not simply why particular inventions appeared, but why a society was able to keep producing them and putting them to work. Mokyr therefore makes modern growth look like an intellectual and institutional achievement as much as an economic one. Secondly, industrial enlightenment and the cultural legitimacy of useful knowledge. A central concept in the book is industrial enlightenment, Mokyr's term for a society in which progress was linked to useful knowledge and rational reform. He does not use enlightenment merely as a label for elite philosophy. Instead, he emphasizes a broader frame of mind that valued observation, experimentation, publication, and the application of knowledge to practical ends. This matters because technological change requires more than clever individuals. It requires a culture that rewards inquiry and sees improvement as desirable and possible. Britain's scientific and literary societies, print culture, and openness to sharing ideas helped make useful knowledge socially visible and transferable. Mokyr suggests that these networks lowered barriers between theory and practice and made innovation more cumulative. The book's deeper point is that economic development depends on legitimacy as well as technique. When a society respects experiment, tolerates challenge to old habits, and treats improvement as a public good, it creates conditions in which innovation is more likely to persist. Thirdly, how propositional and prescriptive knowledge were combined in practical invention, Mokyr makes a careful distinction between propositional knowledge, the kind associated with explanation and scientific understanding, and prescriptive knowledge, the kind embedded in craft skill and practical know-how. One of the book's most useful insights is that industrial advance came from connecting these two forms of knowledge rather than privileging one alone. Scientists could identify principles, measure phenomena, and describe natural regularities, while craftsmen could solve practical production problems through experience and technique. The breakthrough came when these groups interacted and translated their different expertise into workable devices and processes. Mokyr uses this framework to explain why Britain's inventive culture was so productive. It created channels through which ideas could move between laboratories, workshops, and commercial settings. The book therefore highlights collaboration as a mechanism of growth. Innovation was not simply the invention of a brilliant individual, but the outcome of organized exchange between people who knew different things and could make those knowledges mutually useful. Fourthly, institutions, communication networks, and the circulation of ideas in Britain. Another major theme is that Britain's industrial advance was enabled by institutions that helped knowledge circulate. Mokyr gives substantial attention to scientific societies, learned correspondence, publication networks, and a wider public sphere that made technical discussion easier to sustain. These institutions did not create inventions mechanically, but they reduced isolation and encouraged the verification, refinement, and spread of practical knowledge. The book also emphasizes the importance of rational reform in politics and society, suggesting that institutional openness mattered because it supported experimentation in economic life as well as in science. Britain's strength was not only that it had clever people, but that it developed systems for connecting them. Knowledge could move from one region or profession to another, and that circulation made cumulative improvement possible. This helps explain why the Industrial Revolution became durable. A single invention can fade, but a communication infrastructure that continually recombines ideas can generate an expanding pipeline of improvements. Mokyr's account thus ties industrialization to the organization of information, not just to production itself. Lastly, a qualified but influential interpretation of why Britain led first, the book is also notable for the scale of its interpretation and the debates it has generated. Mokyr argues that Britain's early lead was historically special, though he does not reduce everything to one simple cause. His account suggests that Britain combined the right intellectual climate, social openness, and practical skills at a crucial time. That does not mean other factors such as energy resources, markets, or institutions were irrelevant. Rather, Mokyr's point is that these advantages became transformative because they operated within a culture that understood progress as achievable through useful knowledge. Critics have questioned how sharply Enlightenment ideas can be separated from the broader process they are said to explain, and whether Britain's leadership was as decisive as Mokyr implies. Even so, the book's value lies partly in forcing readers to think beyond material determinism. It offers a nuanced framework in which beliefs, institutions, and technical capabilities all matter, but knowledge organization occupies the center. That makes the book influential not only as a history of Britain, but as a theory of how modern growth begins. In conclusion, The Enlightened Economy is best suited for readers who want a serious explanation of the Industrial Revolution rather than a simple chronology of inventions and factories. Historians of Britain, economists interested in growth, students of the Enlightenment, and general readers who want to understand why modern economic development began, when and where it did, will all find it valuable. Its main benefit is conceptual clarity. Mokyr shows that industrialization cannot be understood apart from the social organization of knowledge. He connects science, craftsmanship, print culture, institutions, and reform into a single explanatory framework that is more ambitious than standard accounts based on capital, coal, or wages alone. What makes the book stand out in its category is its combination of broad synthesis and analytical precision. It is not a narrow specialist monograph, but it is also not a superficial popular history. Instead, it offers a historically grounded theory of modern growth, supported by wide reading and careful argument. Readers will come away with a deeper understanding of why Britain was first, why innovation became cumulative, and why ideas mattered so much to economic change. For anyone seeking one of the most influential interpretations of the Industrial Revolution, this book is a landmark. If you would like to support Joel Mokyr, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.